How was our sleep last night? I kept asking this morning too, because thank God, you know, we have entered into a cooler weather, you know, for the next few days. So if you have had some sleepless night, well, you will have a better time, you know, for this few days next. Well, again, it's summertime, right? And summertime for a lot of people is vacation time. We may be traveling over the map, you know, some to the East Coast, some down south, and the STM team, you know, just been to Chicago in the famous Wind City, and yet, you know, I think there's no wind during the week you guys there, right? But anyway, have you been to Washington, D.C.? Yes. This year? Oh, right. Good for you. Usually summer, I try to avoid D.C. The hottest July 4th I've ever spent, most of them are in D.C. Now, if you go to Washington, D.C., there's one very tall monument that we'll never miss, which is that tall monument, which is the Washington Monument, right? We all know that. You won't miss it unless you bypass D.C., you never go into the downtown area. Once you're in the Capitol, you know, you won't be able not seeing it. The Washington Monument was built in 1884 to remember George Washington. Who knows George Washington? Yeah, I should see hands, right? Yeah, we all remember him. He's our first president, and we remember him because he has great military leadership. He also has great political leadership. In the military side, you know, he led all the Minutemen, you know, put it this way, to fight the professional British army, and yet he win over them, you know, eventually. And on the other hand, being the first president, he has set up a very quick sample for all his successors what is meant to be a president in a democratic government. So whenever you go to Washington, when you see the Washington Monument, it reminds us that the greatness of George Washington. And it also reminds us the legacy that he has left for all of us so that, you know, we can live in this society. Now today is not talking about George Washington. He's just a tiny piece of sand in the history. Today I want to talk about a story in the Bible. The story recorded in the book of Joshua, particularly in chapter 3 to chapter 4. But if you want, you can read, you know, from chapter 1 all the way to 5, and then you will get a better understanding of the story. The story is about how the Israelites have finally entered into the promised land. And the backdrop is that God heard about, you know, their crying, and then God sent Moses to Egypt to bail them out, to let them out of Egypt, cross the Red Sea, enter in the wilderness, and marching towards, you know, the promised land. And for whatever reason, you know, we all know the reason, but, you know, Moses didn't make it to the promised land because of his rebellion, and God has appointed Joshua to succeed Moses, to keep on the leadership role, you know, for the Israelites. So they keep on going, and when they reach Moab and go getting closer to the bank of Jordan River. Now, Jordan River has become the final obstacle for them to enter into the promised land. Imagine, you know, what Joshua leading is a close to a million of Israel people, let alone all the livestock and other, you know, personal belonging. Crossing a river is not a big deal, but for 1 million people to cross a river is not an easy task. What's even worse is that when they are crossing, all those people in Canaan, because they want to protect themselves, they can come to attack you. For those of you who are interested in military tactics and strategy, you will know that the dangerous time for an army is while you are in the river, because you are not moving as agile as you were on the ground. And if they were attacked by the cannon people, then, you know, they're dead meat. So the Jordan River has become the final obstacle for Israel to cash God's promise. Now, this morning, we are going to study this story and learn from it. Now, you will remember, you know, I've been on the series of marriage, family, things, topic-related thing, right? And I declare last time I have done with this series. But I want you to bear with me one more time. Because for any family, if you don't care about legacy, if you don't care about how to pass on something important and valuable to the new generation, any family topic is incomplete. So I can call this an extension of my series, okay? And this will be the last session about this family series. And from here, let's learn about how to remember and also how to pass on the legacy. Now, when the Israelites, they reached the east bank of Jordan, they see the river and they know this is a big obstacle for them. They feel perplexed, you know, they are struggling deep in their heart. God knew this. God knew that they are facing such an obstacle, and God knew that, you know, their heart may be melt in face of this challenge. So God did several things to encourage the people. First of all, he chose Joshua to succeed Moses, right? We all know that. And God not just chose Joshua. He actually gave Joshua a very great encouragement in the start of the book of Joshua. In chapter 1, verse 6, God told Joshua, said, "Hey, Joshua, be strong and courageous, for you shall cause these people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them." God speaking, saying that, don't worry. I'm the God who give the promise to the fathers of this Israel. And now you are leading them. Yes, you see a big challenge before you, but don't worry. My promise will be realized. Just don't worry, okay? So for Joshua, this is a great encouragement. This new leader, he cannot do everything by himself, and he knows his own limitations. But with God in his back, he can take heart. So he started to do a lot of things. First of all, he sent two spies into Canaan and tried to gather information or the intelligence about the land so that, you know, he can plot his military strategy. And second thing is, he didn't stop and wait for the spies to come. God told him to go. So he kept leading this Israelite marching towards the bank of Jordan. Well, some of us, you know, may feel a little insecure, you know, I don't even know whether I can cross a river, why I need to lead all these people there. And what if we cannot cross a river, and then, you know, I as a new leader will lose faith. Joshua may have gone through a lot of things, but in his deep faith in God, his trust in God, he led the people to the bank of the river anyway. And he also knew that to cross a river, there must be something beyond them to happen. So he instructs the people to wait for God. He knows God will do something. So he asks his people to cleanse themselves, to confess the sin, to keep themselves as clean, as holy as possible before God. No unconfessed sin. Just like today, you know. If we know that we have some unconfessed sin, my advice for you, my friend, is that confess. Because we are dealing with a God who is so holy, so powerful, so jealous of anything other than pureness. And not only that, he also, for the 1 million people, he also set a formation, a strategy, how to cross a river. And the strategy he put together is that first, the priest will take the ark at the front, okay, at the front end. And then all the troops will be the second row. And then, you know, the last batch will be their family, all the stocking, their belongings, and so forth. Right after Joshua complete his strategy setting, God's affirmation came. Because we can plan, but how to make it successful is beyond our hand. Only God can do it. And God came to Joshua with an affirmation in chapter 3, 7 to 8. God said, today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. Wow, this is such a great assurance for Joshua, this new leader. God put Joshua side by side with Moses. Moses is a parliament leader in the heart of all Israel. When you talk about Moses, they pay the greatest respect they can utter to him. And now God said, I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all these people that they might know that I was with Moses and I will be with you. God has his back. So for Joshua, this is a great affirmation, so that when he assumed the role, as a successor for Moses, he's not alone. God is behind all this. All right, then when they have prepared everything, then God tells the people, Joshua has already planned that the priest will take the ark with them to go first. Actually, this is not originate from Joshua. Joshua takes this from God. But when you look at this arrangement, it doesn't make sense. In a battle, how come a priest, just say if we are going to fight some foreign army, and say, oh, all the pastors should go first. Well, I'm not sure about Pastor Ron. He's macho, he's strong. But for me to go first, you know, I think, you know, I'll be undone in no time. But what doesn't make sense in people's mind is what God's command. God said, priest and the ark will go first. For Joshua, he take it by faith because it's from God. Whatever God said, he followed. And just when he's faithfully followed what God has told him, he experienced a miracle. And he knows that God is not a guy who can just talk. He's a person that he can keep his promise. Chapter 3, 15 to 16, he said, as soon as those bearing the ark and came has come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priest bearing the ark were deep into the brim of the water. The waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Seraphim, and those falling down towards the Sea of the Arab, the Salt Sea, will completely dry out. Just when they follow God's command by faith, they experience a miracle. For Joshua, crossing the river, Jordan River, is a milestone in his spiritual life. Think about 40 years ago, Joshua has passed Red Sea, if you remember. He's that generation, but back then he probably was a young boy. And his father and his neighbors and kind of told him, hey, come on, Joshua, let's go past Red Sea. How come it's a sea? No. God has a great miracle that we can walk through the Red Sea. So as a young boy, you know, he may be just faithfully take up his, he may have a little wagon and he may have some toys, some Legos. I don't know what it is, but he just grab his own stuff, helping his parents cross the Red Sea. And crossing the Red Sea, you know, wow, God is really powerful. See all the water on two sides, and yet I can pass through. So he has acquired deep knowledge that, yes, my God is powerful. He's powerful. I walk through the Red Sea. Now, after 40 years, he still has that knowledge that God is still a powerful God. But this time, he has to put his knowledge into practice. He knows that God is powerful. And he knows that from his parents may be teaching him, you know, over and over again. But 40 years later, when God said, cross Jordan with the priest and ark in the front. What? Why so? Cross Jordan. Priest and ark at the front. And when he faithfully followed, just when the river starting to recede, he experienced God's power once again. This time is different. This time, he trusts God with his past knowledge. Now, the difference compared to last time is that he put his knowledge into practice. The knowledge that God is an almighty God is not just something in a book, not just something people told him. It is something that by faith, he put into practice, he experienced God's power. Jordan, just like Red Sea, all the water stopped. So he walked once again through a dry land. So for Joshua, this is very precious. He has a brand new experience of God, because this time he once again witnessed God's mighty power at work. For Joshua, his spiritual life has mature, has grown one big step. He may be very skeptical in the past, like myself, you know, when God first called me to serve in full-time ministry, you know, I'm kind of skeptical. I'm that type of person. If I can do something, I have a plan B, it's good, but if I could have a plan C, that would be wonderful. And otherwise, I don't want to lift a finger. But when I submit to God, when he calls me, I experience him, just like Joshua. Yes, like Joshua, I know, you know, God is powerful. I know God is faithful, but unless I faithfully follow what he told me, I won't be able to prove this knowledge is true with my witnesses, with my personal experience. For Joshua, that is a great experience. So brothers and sisters, you and I probably have already experienced what Joshua has experienced. You and I might have crossed a lot of Jordans in your life. Don't let it just slip by. Try to recall in your life whether God has done anything. He's a living God. It's for sure he will do something. He's not sitting idle. He's not something belongs to the museum. He's something, we call it living God, is something belongs to you and me deep in our life, actively in our life. For the youngsters, and you say, well, Pastor Philip, you know, I may be too young to see whether God has something to work in my life. Let me give you one challenge. Some statistics show that we have to make a lot of decisions in our life. And a lot of decisions, some are important, some are more important, some are most important, okay? But do you know that most of the most important decisions you make are between the year, 16 to the year of 26. During that 20 year, you'll decide what major you're going to take, whom I'm going to date. I need to get married, what career, so on and so forth. And all those things are important things. Now, you may have gone through the whole thing like us, you know, older folks. But as young people, you might have just gone through, you know, the first several steps. God is your God. He must have done something in your life, the guidance he gave you. Remember the very first struggle when you are facing to pick your major or maybe pick your first date. A lot of things happen. Don't let those things just pass by your life. Don't say that I'm too young to say God has done something in my life. No. In fact, he's doing something in your life during that 10 years, if you belong to this 16 to 26 window. He's doing something very, very important for you, helping you too. Don't let his work just pass by. Remember, he must have done something. Don't waste time. Okay? Try to remember, there might be an experience of Jordan in your life. Don't let it just go. Let it grow in your life, just like Joshua. This is very treacherous. After the Israelites, they finished crossing the river, God has another instruction come in. That is in chapter 4, verse 1 to 2. God said, take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man, and command them, saying the 12 stone, take 12 stone from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight. God said, well, you got to bring some stones from where the ark and the priest is and take it to the other side of Jordan. I have a purpose for it. The Israelites probably don't understand. The first thing, weird thing is, you know, they let the priest go first. And then, you know, the second thing is, God said, well, take some stone with you. Wow, it's not so near, right? But why? Okay, but Israelites, right after or in the midst of experiencing such a miracle, they obey. And they took 12 stones with them and bring it to the first place that they land on in the name of Gilgal. Gilgal is an interesting place. If you look at Israel's life, it represents a brand new beginning for the Israelites. First of all, it is the first encampment site for the Israelites right after they enter into the promised land. I don't know about you, you know, when I first get my first paycheck, you know what I buy myself? It's a bottle of cologne called 4711. You may be too young to hear about 4711. How I learned about this? Because when I was young, I read a lot of Richard's Digest, you know, from my school library, and 4711, they have a lot of advertising. So when I get my first paycheck, I buy this. This is my first thing I get for myself. Wow, very important. And for the Israelite, that first encampment and experience is also very important. And second thing I think about is, after 40 years in the wilderness, once they reach Gilgal, they start to sleep well at night. Gilgal represents the first night they sleep in the promised land. The brand new beginning, the first encampment site, the first night they sleep with peace in the heart because they know they have finally reached the promised land that God has promised them. And more important thing is not this external factor. The internal factor is that they knew that they waste 40 years in the wilderness because they are rebellion. And now, once they enter into promised land, they know they start to be blessed by God if they submissively follow him. And God also explained to them why he wants them to put a sign, using stone to put a sign. And I may have made some mistake with the sign here. Okay. God said in chapter 4, 6 to 7. He said, there may be a sign among you. You need to build a sign with this stone. When your children ask in time to come, what do those stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the God. When you pass over to Jordan, the waters of Jordan were cut off. So this stone shall be to the people of Israel as a memorial power. It's no ordinary thing when they cross the river Jordan as if they were walking on dry land. Deep in their heart, they all know that it's not something done by their hand. It's by God, God's power. So God wants them to know that they don't just know this and keep this to themselves. God wants them to use a monument, the stone set up a monument, use a monument as a tool so that they can educate the future generation. It's very important to have a monument so that they can tell the future generation they are blessed. They are blessed by God. So, brothers and sisters, as I said, you know, God must have some trace of a mighty work in your life, here and there. My question for you is, after you experience all these things, do you treasure God's work in your life? Do you treasure that? Gilgal and the monument over there is a symbol to remind you all these things. But don't keep this to yourself. How about your friend? And if you are old enough to have children, have you told your children? You have also have a neighbor too. If they have never learned about this, have you told them, hey, my God is powerful? Do you want to tell them? You have experienced all this. God said, yes, I have a lot of monuments in your life, a lot of Gilgal in your life. Don't keep it to yourself. Let people know. Most importantly, in a family setting, let your future generation know. Now, if you read the story, you will find that the monument actually is a very important character in this whole story, right? And the passage we have just read, Joshua 4, chapter 4, 19 to 24, God repeatedly said, told Israel how to set up the monument, and he explained to them why he wanted to build the monument. Now, from this passage, we can actually see two very significant things about a monument with a deeper meaning beyond, you know, just the surface. So let's go into that one by one. First of all, a monument is more than just a rear mirror. Have you ever used a rear mirror? When you drive, right? You use a rear mirror to see what happened in the past, right? So the good thing about monument is that it will help us to remember what God has done in the future. But however, when you look at a rear mirror when you are driving, you don't just drive, keep on watching the rear mirror, will you? You just drive and look at the rear mirror. No. The reason for you to look at the rear mirror is to help you make better decisions so they can drive forward. You make sure that, you know, the cars behind you, maybe beside you, and things like that. The monument is more than just a rear mirror to help you understand what's behind, what's past, already past, but also helps you make better decisions to live the life down the road. God told us to answer the children with an emphasis that they have experienced a miracle in the Red Sea. Now they have also experienced a miracle in Jordan. All points to the living God. God is always working in our midst. He's not something idle. He's active. And the monument at Gilgal remind people that God actually blessed them, help them to overcome a natural barrier that they have never been able to overcome by themselves. And with that in place, it will help them to face the future. The future may be uncertain, maybe don't know. I don't know, you know, for those of you who are still in college, you might not know, wow, I don't know when I come out, you know, whether the economy is good or bad, whether I can land a job that I would like, or do I get to stay in Bay Area or go to any place that I want. Yes, we don't know. But if he's the God who have led you to pass through all the things in the past, he will be the same God to keep his promise to guide you, walk down the path, down the road. So a rear mirror will help us to drive down the road more confidently because we know it's a God with us. The second thing is, a monument is not just a rear mirror, it's also a compass. That compass points to a God-oriented life. A lot of people, they have their philosophy for their own life. But that monument points to one direction, that yes, if we live a God-oriented life, we know that God is that faithful God. He never fails us. He's a powerful God that even something beyond our own hand, he can make it happen. We have to let our kids know he is our covenant God, and yet he's faithful to keep his promise. Also, this compass also reminds us as God's children, we have to keep up our relationship with God, and we have to keep up a God-feeling lifestyle. That's what God said here. So that all the people of the earth may know the hand of the Lord is mighty. Yes, miracle. But internally, we can look at that. We might fear the Lord forever. This monument reminds us so that we can fear our God forever with good reason. So what's the moral of the story? Make it simply in four words, remembering the miracles, and then we will know how to revere in God. The monument at Gilgal is a monument for spiritual legacy. To remember, the main thing to remember is what happened in the past, and behind this historical event, there's a miracle. That's very important. And who makes this miracle happen? It is the Almighty God. It's very important to remember God's work, God's miracle, but it's more important to remember it is God who makes this miracle happen. So, a monument, very important. He wants us to always remember God is by our side, and yet always remind us we need to live a God-fearing life. Well, as I said, our life are full of God's grace and his work, and we have to pass along to our new generation. Now, again, you know, the youngster may be too young to think about this, but I think you can start planning this, okay? A lot of our old folks, we might have accumulate, you know, some properties, some wealth, or whatever, you know, you accumulate on earth. And a lot of people, they want to make sure that all these things can be passed smoothly and securely to a future generation, right? That's why, you know, lawyers will tell you, hey, to write a will. And a will, you know, sometimes is not too secure because it will go through court probation, and then you better set up a living trust, right? How many of you have heard about a guy, his name of Lam Sau Wing, Sau Wing Lam? Okay, well, you probably haven't heard about him. He's a Christian, and he's a banker, used to be a banker, and he served the community with his banking professional knowledge. I listened to his program once. A lot of people call in. Most of the questions are regarding how can I write a living trust so that, you know, there will be no complication. how can I write a will that the government will not be able to poke their finger in it and mess around my planning? Good. We all have a good intention to pass along what we have to our children. Now I want to give you a challenge. What we have accumulated is not necessarily our earthly properties, right? We might also have some spiritual property. Have you ever thought about how you can pass them along to our next generation? Now, for the youngsters, you need to start planning. Imagine that God will help you start your family. You might have your belongings. You will have your descendants. How you will pass along? If for our earthly property, we do our best to make sure that the transition is smooth, why don't we do something for our spiritual property? Have you thought about this? How you can smoothly transfer all the grace, miracles, transformation, molding and shaping of your life and pass on to your next generation? Have you thought about it? Or you think that this is unimportant? That's equally important, sometimes even more important, right? Just like you put a huge your fortune, you know, in a deposit box, you want to make sure that the key you can pass on to your next generation. And you have to tell me which is more valuable, your property or your spiritual gift you receive from God. Shall we also make sure that we can pass them along? The most effective way, there's no one fixed formula for all of us. In our life, there might be, you know, some people, there might be some places, some events, or even some Bible passage. Always keep reminding you, you know, God's grace and God's work in your life. This is your monument. This is your Gilgal. Make sure that you don't keep it to yourself. You make it visible to your next generation, to your love, to the children that you love. And the best way to pass this along is you leave out all this monument with your life to testify, to practice, to experience God. Invite your next generation to experience God together. That is a way of pass along. Make sure that they will receive the key from you. Because we might have 10,000 reasons of two to do any other things, but there's only one reason we do this. Because He's a God actively in your life, walking alongside you. He will never fail you. Do you want to tell your children? Do you want to sing this song together to Him? Let's sing. This one I cannot sing. But we are all familiar with that, right? Let's sing it out loud from the bottom of your heart. No sang?
So worship His holy name.
You get it? All right, let's all stand.
Sing like never.